Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show. Hi there, Paul.
Hello.
Good to see you in studio once again.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Riding your motorcycle today.
Oh, yeah.
And ready to talk about something pretty basic, and that is why you prefer trusts versus wills in your planning with purpose services.
Yeah, I don't know if it's basic or not, but yes, it is kind of a core thrust of what I do, is I primarily utilize trust instruments. So when we're doing estate planning, there's two instruments that attorneys can use. It doesn't matter which attorney you go to, we can use a will or we can use a trust. Now, there's a third one, which is some attorneys try to cram a trust into a will. That's called a testamentary trust.
Oh.
That is necessary for some types of Medicaid planning, but I don't think that it functions the way that it should. The legal language is usually correct, but I think it's an impractical tool. So therefore, I try to help people discover, do they need to use a will or do they need to use a trust? And a lot of that discussion revolves around, what are the client goals? In other words, what do they envision? What do they want to have happened should they pass away, or actually during their lifetime first, and then when they pass away, how do they envision handing off whatever is left over to the next generation, or to your beneficiaries, or to your church, or to whomever you're going to be generous with at the end of your life? And there are, in my opinion, some very distinct benefits to using a revocable living trust instead of using a will. And so I wanted to get into some of those conversations here with this new series of the benefits of a trust. And so there's kind of the background, is I wanted an opportunity to be more forthright in discussing, these are the benefits. This is why I prefer a trust, that individuals should use a trust.
And again, this does not have to do with how big of an estate you have. You want to really dispel that myth.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I have clients that have much smaller estates that utilize a trust because they have family values or they have goals with their finances after they pass away, instead of the will method, which is simply going to write a check. Now, a will will do a couple things, and it does it fine, which is it's going to tell us who the beneficiary is. That's a good thing. Most people that use a will also back it up with beneficiary designations or transfer on death. Mm-hmm. So in accounts and other, whether it's a retirement account, whether it's a bank account, you can even do it for homes now in Washington. You can put a beneficiary on those assets. And ultimately, what's going to happen is that those assets, after being presented with a death certificate at the institution, they're simply going to give you your portion, and that's called outright. It's into your hand. You can take the money, put it into your personal account. So a will then gets assets to the right people, similar to using beneficiary designations. That's a good thing. It also gives you power and control of naming a personal representative. In other words, who's going to close your estate, an executor. So you get to speak to that. Gives court instructions, and then if you have minor children, it'll give us guardianship. Beyond that, that's what a will does. It gives money to the right people, and it tells us who is going to close the estate. Mm. That's it. It can't do any tax work. Now, again, some attorneys try to put a trust inside of a will. What they're trying to do is some tax work with it. Mm. So again, the language might be right. I think it functionally fails. So therefore, I don't use that system, because most individuals have greater desires than just, I want to give the money to my kids. And how do you know if you have other desires? Well, only by coming in and sitting down and talking through, letting me ask questions. So that will uncover some of the things and some of your values that we need to implement into a plan. So therefore, I'm not against wills. I don't want people to hear that I actually have something against them. I just think most people have a greater desire in their estate planning when you get an opportunity to sit down with somebody and actually express what your vision is and understand more of what a trust can do.
Doesn't a trust also help more for issues that you encounter in this life, in this world?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something of doing these shows with you for several years that I've come to realize is you kind of need these documents and this planning for just the last, you know, maybe 10 years of your life if you have health issues and
for sure.
You know, so
yeah, and some of those benefits so are that you're going to have more control over your assets during your lifetime. And so, well, how is that possible? So, if I have a bank account and I'm the only one on that bank account, I have full, absolute, complete control, and I can write checks, I can move my money, I can do whatever I want with those funds. I have absolute, complete control. Until you start to age or until you have a health incident, now you are going to potentially lose control. And it happens in one of two ways, which is someone starts feeling their age and they go, let me bring my child on. My responsible child, or not even sometimes the responsible one, the one that lives right next to me.
Or lives with you.
Yeah, or with you. Whether responsible or not, let me bring them on to the bank account. That way, if something ever happens to me, then they can write the checks and step into the gap. Well, you just gave half your assets away, whether you realize or not. So you just lost control. Mm. Or it happens that you have estate planning documents, you use a will, then you would likewise have a financial power of attorney. That's a good thing. And most financial powers of attorneys, what they do is they give access to an account, but they rarely, if ever, as a matter of fact, I'm having a hard time thinking through as I'm talking, a financial power of attorney that has done more than just give access to an account versus actually giving instructions on how to use the assets. Mm. And that's where a trust can really differentiate itself. And as a matter of fact, you have to be really careful because even most trusts that I review do not give guidance to how to use your finances. They operate very similar to a will and or to a financial power of attorney, which is give money to a certain person and give access to a successor trustee. So if I use the term will or use the term trust, you may be thinking, oh, I have a trust, so this is what I have. Actually, no. Most trusts do not give appropriate direction in the document itself. So again, a financial power of attorney and most trusts will give access, but they won't give instruction. So let me ask you a question out there in the audience. If you are having a health incident, would it be your preference if you were to remain in your home to be cared for if it was safe for you to remain at your home and it was medically possible? And then the other part that you had the assets in order to support that decision simultaneously. Fine, you've done estate planning. Go to your documents and find the instruction to the successor trustee or to your financial power of attorney agent that talks about that issue. And in a majority of cases, you're not going to find it. Mm-hmm. So there's a big disconnect in most estate planning documents as a whole, will and financial power of attorney or revocable living trust. Unfortunately, both of them have a major gap, in my opinion. They don't give enough instructions. They don't tell the next person how you value using your money to care for yourself. So a well-designed trust will also give that added value. So therefore, it's my opinion that if we give clear instructions, I've actually given you more power over your assets than what you currently have. Because you have power, but what if that power starts to diminish? You either give a child access, or you have a health incident and someone only has access to the accounts. No one's given instruction. So therefore, by giving clear instruction, you're actually able to use your voice now to speak into values that you have so that someone knows how to utilize your finances. Therefore, I say you actually have more power and control over your assets by using a revocable living trust design than you do by using a financial power of attorney or utilizing most trusts, unfortunately. Mm. So there's a way to ensure that you are well taken care of during your lifetime, which was your point, Mark. How? By giving you more control over your assets by speaking to the issue of this is what I value and this is how I want my finances used. So my opinion, more control to a trust maker, and that is a benefit during your lifetime. But of course, there's other benefits during your lifetime as well.
Okay. Well, that's one of the kinds of protections, health issues that might happen in this life. Also, some other protections in your notes here. You talk about remarriage, divorce, accidents that might happen, bankruptcy. Which one of these do you want to take on?
Well, so a lot of those are for after we've passed away.
Okay.
Versus during your lifetime. So okay. That's actually a really good, clear distinction, which is many individuals think that a trust, a revocable living trust, is going to protect their assets. That is not an accurate statement. Mm. So if I am the trust maker, then if I have a bank account, that bank account number still has my social security number behind the scenes. Mm. Okay. So the trust would have a profile and I would be the trustee of that account. But because it's mine and I am alive, my social security number is attached to that account. So therefore, in a revocable living trust, because I have full power and control over my assets, so much so that they still have my social security number, then there is no asset protection during my lifetime when I use a revocable living trust. Mm. The benefits of using a revocable living trust during your lifetime to the one who created it are greater instructions. And by the way, those instructions can also include taking care of other individuals. Now, I've reviewed probably thousands of estate plans now in my career, whether it be a will, whether it be a trust. And I believe, and I use my words very wisely, so I'm slowing down here because I don't want to exaggerate anything. I want to be very truthful in the matter. And I don't believe that I can recall any time when a financial power of attorney also gave the agent the ability to assist someone else financially with the individual's money. So here's the scenario. My daughters are 28 and 29. One of the things I didn't understand in raising children is that the financial support really never stops. I thought that once they were out of the house, that there was an opportunity then that they would be self-sustaining. It's just one of those, you know, blissful thinking things, I guess. I don't know. Now, it does not bother me. I love my daughters. I'll help them with anything that they need. And that's just the heart of the father, right? Okay. Well, here's an issue. If I became incapacitated, or if I had a health incident. Now, if one of my daughters is struggling financially, would I want to continue to support them? And my heart would say, yes, I would. Now, others would say, actually, they can take care of themselves. They can get a job. They can support themselves. I understand that. It's not a problem. All I'm saying is for Paul Grant personally, I would want that if I could continue to afford it, that I would want to assist my girls financially if they needed financial assistance. Now, it's not if they want it, so we're not going to give them vacation money and everything else, but if it's needed. So in all the years I've reviewed wills and trusts, I don't believe that I've only seen two, maybe a third, but I can't quite remember, but maybe just two documents, and they were both trusts, that actually gave the successor trustee the ability to support the family with the finances instead of just the person who created the trust or just the person who created the financial power of attorney. Mm. So now I have another gap during my lifetime. Not only do I not have proper instructions, things that I want to tell the person, this is what I value with my money, spend it like this. But now what if there is a gap in someone I need to support? Do you have smaller children? Do you have children who are in college that still need your financial assistance? Do you have a special needs child that if they were not able to assist themselves, that everything would be at risk? These are things that need to be considered in good planning. And in a revocable living trust that is properly developed, these things should be addressed, and they can be addressed. I believe you have more power, more control, more ability to assist your family in a well-designed trust.
Benefits of a trust this week. There are a number of them. We're going through it with Paul, and you're intrigued by his approach to this subject. You want to find out about his services. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, you can head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the benefits of a trust, according to Paul Grant this week. And we want to continue to enumerate some of these and how a trust can help beneficiaries. You want to expand on this?
Yeah, the first beneficiary of your trust is always you. And if you're married, then to both spouses. Now, and I talked a little bit about some of those benefits. It gives you a lot more control. Now, how about if one of you passes away? So I'm going to address married couples for just a moment here. So if you're single, I'm sorry, but hang in there with me. So married couples, how most trusts work, they call it an A-B trust. They call it a Q-tip trust, a bypass trust, a safe harbor trust. All of this language, all of it, it means exactly the same thing. It's just wrapped up in a different bow, and you're putting lipstick on a different pig, and it's still the same lipstick. So here's what happens. When my wife and I have a revocable living trust, we have one trust to manage everything because we live in a community property state. Now, if you have moved from a different state, specifically a separate property state, and you've done estate planning, your estate planner may have set you up with individual trusts, so two different trusts. That's very common in separate states because you don't have the community aspect like we do in Washington. As far as community property. So in a community property state like Washington, we use one trust. So then when one spouse dies, it's always the man in my stories. Mm. So the man always dies first in my stories. It's because we've been told we're going to die first. So now I'm being the final good husband. So in my story, I've passed away. Now the trust has instructions to take half of our assets and split them in two. So in other words, at death, I get the opportunity to direct where I want my portion of community property. In community property, it's all together. But at death, I get to direct my half of it. So I say in a trust environment, I say, open up a trust, open up my trust. So we're going to split it now. My wife would have her portion and I would now have my portion. And I want you to hold that so that my wife can have access to this. So she becomes the beneficiary of my portion. This is a very, very traditional tax scheme trust. This is how a high majority of trusts are built. Why do we do it? Because in Washington state, there are exemptions. Some of my estate could be exempt from tax. As of the recording of this show, it's $2.2 million, $2,193,000, but who's counting the pennies? It is soon going to raise to $3 million. So that's a great thing. In Washington, there will be an increase of your exemption. So an individual can have up to $3 million, and that $3 million will not be exposed to estate tax. That's great. If you have more than that, then a tax is going to start on anything over the $3 million. So that's how an estate tax works. You get an exemption amount, exempt from tax, then anything above that exemption starts to get taxed. So why do we split it? Well, let's say that my wife and I were very blessed and we had $10 million. Well, clearly we're over $3 million. Now, if I used a will and I said, or beneficiary designation and or joint assets, everything would go to my wife, right? Well, then she's worth all $10 million. Well, that's a bummer. Well, not for her. That'd be great for her. But it's a tax bummer because I didn't use my $3 million exemption opportunity. Mm. So if I split it, now remember, I gave myself a very nice estate, $10 million. That means $5 million would go to my trust, but three of it would be exempt. Are we following? Mm-hmm. So it's really hard on radio because I don't have a whiteboard. I love whiteboards, but I don't have a whiteboard for you. So this is one of the main reasons why we split assets when one spouse dies. Okay. And then there's an overflow bucket. So the other $2 million will not be taxed until my wife dies. So she'll have access to all of our assets combined. Okay. That's a good thing. So why do we do it? Because we have to make sure I can use my exemption right. This helps save the family money down the road. Mm. This is a very, very traditional way of doing planning. Now, I have a very, very sad story. My wife gets remarried. Yeah, that's just what's sad to me. So I die and Bo, the tennis pro who has a great backhand, she sees him and goes, oh, Bo, you have a great backhand. And now they get married. Okay. How much of my money would I want Bo to get? Go ahead, Mark. You can help me out.
Zero.
A big fat nada. Okay. I don't care
if you have kids.
Yeah. Because who, if my wife doesn't need the assets, okay, so she's got her own money, but let's ratchet down the estate. Let's say we have a smaller estate. What if she does need it because Bo's a tennis pro and he doesn't make any money? So what if she actually needs it? Well, that's what the trust is there for. Mm-hmm. Now, what if my wife all of a sudden finds out that Bo's a swindler and she was taken and has to walk away? If we put some of the assets in my trust, those are off limits to Bo forever. So therefore, now my wife has to go through a divorce scenario. That's a bummer because she got swindled. But my assets are not on the table to be considered. So therefore, we start protecting each other. So not only have we created tax protections in the planning with a very traditional AB trust, okay, or a bypass trust, safe harbor trust. All of these trusts really mean the same thing. They all do the same trick. They maneuver assets away from the surviving spouse, but for the benefit of the surviving spouse. Then if something goes wrong in my wife's life, she's driving down the road and she barrels into somebody, it's her fault and it's bad. They're not going to have access to my portion because I didn't create the accident. So therefore, there is a shield that goes around the assets for the benefit of my spouse. She gets she gets everything that we had together that we've worked very hard to build. So there's really no detriment to my wife. As a matter of fact, there's only benefit because it's shielded from her creditors, if there are any, and we've also protected money from taxes so that the family and or charities and or anyone else that we deem can receive more of what we worked for. Mm. So we're going to have to pick this back up, but there are some of the benefits to beneficiaries, but we got so many more different benefits of a trust as we come back to this discussion.
So many benefits of a trust versus will. Again, not against wills, but Paul is much more into trusts, and he would like to help you with your estate. People are intrigued. Paul, how do they find out more about your services?
Yeah, great. Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and also schedule things so I can sit down and talk to you. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, it's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.